10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. Hey everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of Am I Allowed to Like Anything? The podcast that talks to people about their work, their lives, and how they are maintaining their optimism in this world. I'm Darian Simone Harvin, your host, and this week I have novelist, journalist, and co-host of the podcast, Hey Sis, Nicole Blades, here with me. Nicole is getting ready to release her next book, Have You Met Nora? It's the story of a woman who is mixed race, but passes as white. As you guys know, I'm always really interested to talk to journalists and authors about their writing process, and I asked Nicole about how she chooses the stories that she wants to tackle. We also talk about some of the cultural moments that she remembers when she was coming up in the media industry. There's also some Big Little Lies talk. There aren't any spoilers, which I think is a good thing, but we have a really good conversation around the importance of telling adult women's stories in 2017. If you haven't already, sign up for the Am I Allowed to Like Anything newsletter. The link is in this week's episode description, and it's a lot of good stuff about what I'm paying attention to and liking each week in a way that I hope is not super overwhelming or can be overwhelming. And remember that you can rate and subscribe to Am I Allowed to Like Anything on iTunes, listen on SoundCloud, and always join the conversation using the hashtag AIATLA. Nicole, hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited. I have so much that I really want to talk to you about. First question I really want to ask you is, how did you grow up? Tell me about what life was like for you.
Oh, wow. Life was pretty good. I can say that with all confidence. I grew up in Montreal, Canada. It was my parents who were from Barbados. So I grew up in a Caribbean Canadian household. I have three siblings, an older brother, an older sister, and a younger sister. And we had, like, the Blades crew was a pretty tight family. We still are. And it was really a good life, you know?
Why do you feel like it was such a good life?
Because I don't remember, I don't have any, thankfully, any memories of, like, misery and wanting things, and our parents really provided a good life for us. We went to great schools, we had friends, we had, you know, we could play. My son, who was eight, he was just asking me last night what I liked to do as a kid when I was eight.
Oh my gosh.
He said, well, when you were eight, what did you like to do? And he was asking me what kind of games I like to play, and I was telling him about the epic neighborhood-wide hide-and-seek games we would play on the weekends.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And all of that stuff, it's just like, it just warms my heart because I remember how fun it was to just feel like you're connected to a larger fabric than just your family. We definitely had that. My parents had a lot of friends. Our house was like the party house. So oftentimes if they're going to have, you know, a party or they're going to get together, my parents are cooking up some stuff, it would be at our house that, that everyone would come. And it was just a good time. Like, my parents are really jovial, nice people, and they're very welcoming. So you know, a lot of times my friends would be like, oh, I love your parents.
Or something. Right. You know?
So it was just a nice household.
You had the popular parents.
Yeah, we had the popular parents for a while before it became not a thing to say. But often people would say, oh, it's like the Huxtables or whatever. But now you don't want to become
parents. Yeah, now it's like you don't particularly want to be the Huxtables. But I get it.
Yeah, it's tainted now. Thanks, Bill. But it was a really nice, loving household. Everyone was very supportive of what you were trying to do. My parents were really not strict, but we had rules, you know, in the house, and school was very important. And good thing I liked school, so it wasn't like, oh my gosh, this is horrible.
Yeah.
But they were really supportive and very loving, and we showed each other love and kindness and thoughtfulness all the time, too. So I think that helped sort of, you know, launch me in a good direction to come from that kind of upbringing. Did you grow up a big reader and writer?
Yes. Yes, okay. I was a big reader. I really enjoyed it. That's the other thing my son was like, what did you like to do? And I said, reading. And he was like, besides reading. I really liked reading a lot. And so much so that I would sometimes, I'd be reading something and I would kind of tune out the rest of the world. I know that sounds cliched, but I would really tune out the rest of the world. And my mother would be, Nicole, I'm calling you. But I was just so into the story.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed reading. Writing, too. when I was growing up, there was a show, Miami Vice, mm-hmm. on NBC. And I was a huge fan of Crockett and Tubbs and Miami Vice. And it got so that I would record the show on our VCR. I'm really dating myself. I'd record the show on our VCR, and I'd watch it. It was on Friday, so I'd watch it on Saturday, and then I'd watch it again on Sunday. But then I started writing my own sort of like early fan fiction.
Wow.
So I was Crockett in this in these stories, and I had another friend who liked the show. She was Tubbs, but we were like the female version, mm-hmm. and we would go through Miami in my mind, and we'd be doing different things, but not necessarily like, you know, murdering drug dealers, but we had our own story,
right.
and I was very into it. Like, I really enjoyed storytelling. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is because my father is a really good storyteller.
Okay.
Not writing, but if he's going to sit at a table, he will have you locked in to his story about growing up in Barbados, some of the quirky, crazy characters he met, some of his adventures. And he just knows how to keep you, how to string you along and keep you like, okay, and then what happened kind of thing. So I think I've always enjoyed storytelling. And that sort of felt like a natural progression into writing.
So when it was time to go to college, was majoring in like literature communications like a no-brainer?
It wasn't, because at the time I was trying to think, like, what do I want to do? And mm-hmm. the idea of being a writer as a career didn't hit for me. It felt like that's something you sort of do on your own and it's sort of private. But I don't know why I wasn't thinking, like, let me just go for that initially. So I sort of found my way around it. But at one point, I was like, maybe I'll be a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Because at that stage, there were a finite number of jobs that people would do. You know, you'd be a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher. But I wasn't thinking outside of that box. I wasn't thinking, like, I'll be an author, you know? Mm-hmm. So the closest thing to a writer as a career was a journalist. And I remember my father had a friend who, a coworker whose son went to journalism school in Ottawa. And like the reports back were like, oh, he's just wasting his time.
Oh my gosh. Right?
So I was kind of like, oh boy.
But that did that defer you at all?
It kind of made me not sure of it, you know?
Okay.
Like not thinking like this is something I can really make a go of and make a career out of it. And also, I wasn't necessarily reading a lot of newspapers and magazines in that sense at that time where I would know, oh, yeah, I've seen this magazine writer all the time and I follow. You know those people that have sort of like latched onto someone and mm-hmm. they use them as a mentor even though they've never met the person?
Yeah.
So I never had anyone like that in the sort of journalism world. And so it took me a little while to kind of come around to the fact that this is what I want to do and this is what would make me happy. So I went ahead and pursued law. In fact, I took the LSAT. And I remember so distinctly I remember what I was wearing. I remember the room. And there was this one moment where I was like, I do not want to do this. I don't want to do
you
this.
You could just feel it. Yeah.
I don't care about this. I'm not doing this. And I ended up going, I left. I never even checked my scores. I was just so done with it. Mm-hmm. And I ended up going and volunteering to work for the school's newspaper. And that's when I start to feel a little bit more like, okay, I'm arching towards something that feels like this could be it, you know, and
yeah.
I really like this. However, I still, like my degree was in mass communications because they didn't have like a journalism specific focus. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking communications would still be sort of a safety net so that if I still haven't felt I didn't feel confident enough to say I want to be a writer, I could do something in communications. Mm-hmm. So that would involve writing and it would involve, you know, telling a story in some way.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting involved in public relations. So each way I was trying to, I guess in a way, I was just trying to get the confidence up to say, no, I don't want to do that, that, or that.
I want to do this.
I want to do this. And mm-hmm. it's writing. So I was doing things that were sort of writing adjacent, but not necessarily like full focus writing.
Yeah.
So it took me a little minute to get the confidence up to say, that's what I want to do. And when I did, there was no turning back from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What caused you to move to the States, essentially? You moved to New York City first?
I did. So once I decided I want to do this writing journalism thing, did my research, and I was like, the mecca, the place that you have to be is New York. Because mm-hmm. all the magazines, all the newspapers, all of the real journalism was happening out of New York. The same way that I was thinking back then, like, if you want to be an actor on TV and movies, you got to go to LA.
Okay.
So for me, it was like, okay, if you really want to do this, you need to go to New York. And that's what brought me here.
What was one of your favorite jobs coming out of it, throughout any point in time in your career? Like, what was one of your, because I have then a second question that I'm mm-hmm. really interested to know.
One of my favorite jobs, I've had a lot of them. One of my favorite jobs may have been, one of my favorite jobs was working at Essence Magazine.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Because it was Essence Magazine mm-hmm. and it was, you know, it had that reputation, but it was also the people that I was working with. I was mm-hmm. working in the fashion and beauty department. I was editorial assistant, but I got to meet so many people. I got introduced to designers and ideas and art, and I'm still friends with those people that I met there, and it was a really good landing spot for me. It was felt like, not cushioned, but it felt like, okay, this isn't one of those hard knocks type of stories. It felt like a good place to land, where other people who were older than I was and more experienced than I am, they were looking out for me. Mm-hmm. And I really felt supported.
Yeah.
So that was one of my best jobs because I made some really good friends. I learned some really good things that I still, you know, carry and use today.
Yeah.
For sure.
So I've been thinking a lot, even just personally, about cultural moments that I feel like keep on happening. Everything that's from, like, Kendall Jenner and Pepsi to like great moments, right? I'm trying to think of one right now. There's a Get Out, Moonlight. So, you know, there are all of these moments that I know I'm going to remember covering in some capacity.
Right.
And then looking back and remembering, oh, I remember what that was like. I remember how I felt when this happened. Yeah. I remember when people were talking about this.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, when you think about those moments for yourself, like, what do you think about?
My gosh, there's so many things that happened. I think about cultural moments. I think about, like, some of the really horrible things, like mm-hmm. when Biggie died, mm-hmm. when Tupac was killed.
I can't even imagine.
Those were crazy. I remember I was living in Fort Greene. I was in a townhouse. I came home. The news had started spreading. And, of course, we didn't have, like, the internet. Like, it wasn't like it is now. Mm-hmm. There was no Twitter.
Yeah.
So you had to kind of get your stuff.
How was that? Actually, I'm really interested to know how exactly that story spread.
Yeah. Like,
it was all radio.
So a lot of it was Hot 97. A lot of the radio people were talking about it. So they'd make this announcement, and you're, like, listening in a car in a taxi. You're like, can mm-hmm. you turn to the station? And everyone's just listening. And I remember I came into my my apartment and I walked up the stairs, and the first thing I did is I turned on my stereo, and it was Angie Martinez, I think, who was talking, and it was just so pin drop quiet. And she said, that's it, y'all, like, Tupac, he's dead. But it just didn't resonate because he had been shot before.
Yeah.
And he survived that. So you were like, no, is this right? So then you're calling other people mm-hmm. and everybody was talking about it. Like, there was everything's. Was at a standstill
yeah.
and everyone was talking about it. But I remember so clearly just turning on that radio and listening to the announcement. And then, you know, the days after that, everyone was just like on and on about it. It was on the news, but it was just such a cultural moment that anyone who's in my age group or who was around at that point, you remember it, you know?
Totally.
I also remember, I'll never forget this too, when the OJ verdict came out. We were watching it from, I was at Essence. At the time, the office was on Times Square, and it was right adjacent to the big screen, the big jumbotron. So Susan Taylor, who was the editor-in-chief at the time, forever she was mm-hmm. there. So she had an office, this really beautiful corner office with large windows that you could look out and see all of Times Square. And they said the announcement's going to be made. I mean, the verdict's going to be called. So we're like, okay. So everyone kind of went into her office because she had a TV there. And they also had the Jumbotron showing it. Oh. And I will never forget when they said, and she stumbled over his name. And then she said, you know, not guilty. The room was so heavy. Some people were happy. Some people were kind of stunned. But I remember looking out at Times Square and it was stopped again. Another moment where messengers on their bikes, the taxi cabs, people were out of their cars and just looking up at the screen. And it was just surreal because you were thinking, you know, what now?
Like how the whole world stopped. It really felt like the world just stopped
because this huge cultural moment happened. And you were like, what? And I know people who went into law and are lawyers today because of that trial, because they were watching it so like day by day. And it was so protracted. It was so long. It was on forever. And I remember like daytime TV was just, that was it. Mm-hmm. So it was another cultural moment where you just always remember where you were. I remember when the Bronco chase happened. I was in school. Mm-hmm. I was at York still. And I remember that an NBA game was interrupted and they were showing you. And so I was watching the NBA game with my boyfriend at the time. And we were like, what's happening here? Like OJ, because you haven't heard about OJ at that time. We were like, OJ.
Yeah.
And then when we saw this slow chase, people were like, what? It was just so bizarre because all you could do is call people on the phone.
Right.
Yeah. I wonder what it would have been like had Twitter and those kinds of social media things been, I mean, it would have been a whole different thing.
It's interesting to feel like now if you were in that moment where you were in Susan Taylor's office and you had your phone, you know, yeah. You probably would have been taking a photo
right.
of like Times Square.
Yep. And people would have been stunned. Instagram storying it.
Exactly.
And all. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So now I want to talk more about being a novelist.
Yes.
And I'm really always fascinated with just like, yes, the creative process of writing a book,
right.
but also when you decide this is what I'm going to write about. Mm-hmm. Like to me, that doesn't feel easy, but I guess right. it just depends on who you
right.
are.
Right.
Like I feel like I talked to Angela Flournoy, who's yes. been on my podcast.
She is actually a really good friend of my younger sister. They went to USC together.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But she was like, I knew I wanted to write about this. Mm-hmm. Is basically what she's, I mean, I'm sure she had some yeah. back and forth about the specifics, but there was something she said on my podcast that I'll never forget. She was like, no one told me I could not do this. You know,
right.
this is what I wanted to write about.
Right.
And, you know, no one told me I couldn't use these ideas, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yeah, that does.
And so I'm interested to know for you, we can talk. I kind of want to talk about it broader and then specifically about a couple of the books that you've written. Mm-hmm. Not only like how do you, I guess, like conceptualize the storylines for your books,
right?
But even before that, and feel free to also like use one of your books as an example. Mm-hmm. When do you say, okay, I'm going to go with this
right.
story. This is what I want to write about.
That, I think you're right. It changes from person to person. And I think mm-hmm. it also changes from story to story sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it could be something that you're just sort of imagining or wondering about. Like, I wonder if, you know, like what we were just talking about, like, I wonder what would have happened if this big crime story, the verdict was read and it was during this other time instead of this, you know what I mean? Or you're time traveling in your mind about something that happened and you wonder what a person who was intricately involved, how they felt, and that could build a story out of that. Mm. Sometimes it's something you experience yourself and you kind of want to use that as your launching pad.
Okay.
And other times it's something that you just are really curious about. And I think curiosity is the thing that often leads you to the best stories because that makes you ask a lot of questions,
right.
do a lot of research. And I think for me, with, for example, The Thunder Beneath Us, the book that came out last fall, mm-hmm. that came from, I was reading this story, this is like six, seven years ago. I was reading this story, it was one of those long reads in a magazine, and it was about these three brothers who have this Christmas tradition of going ice fishing. Mm-hmm. So they did it this 1 year, and they took the family dog out with them, and something happened, and they were on some piece of ice that wasn't frozen over solidly, and the dog went through the ice. So in an effort to save the dog, all three brothers ended up going in, and only one brother survived.
Oh, so that's how you came up with the concept.
Yeah, so I was like, oh. So I kept thinking about this, because I was like, that's just horrible. I can't even imagine. So then I started to try to imagine, like, mm-hmm. what would that have been like if you're the surviving brother? And then I started thinking, what would have that been like if you were, if these brothers were all, like, adults, they were in their 30s. Mm-hmm. But what if you were 17 and that happens?
Right.
Or what if it was a girl and her brothers are the ones who died? So I started thinking about, like, how that would affect somebody, and it really got my curiosity going. So I said, okay, I want to do this story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it starts to come to you. I mean, you sound like a crazy person sometimes, but, like, all these ideas and people and characters start to come to you, and you're just sort of shaping it that way. But it was a magazine story that launched that particular story.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, actually, maybe the question I should have asked first was, when did you decide that you wanted to write your first book, Earth's Water?
Okay. That one, see, I had always been writing for myself, mm-hmm. like just writing little stories here and there, creative writing, on the side of doing my journalism work. And I, with Earth's Waters, I wanted to tell a story that was set in Barbados, but modern day Barbados, mm. because a lot of the stories my father had told me, and also living there,
okay,
for the 2 years that I lived there, really, and I was a reporter at the Nation newspaper in Barbados, so I met a lot of people, a lot of interesting characters, mm-hmm. a lot of people's backstories, and I'm a curious person by nature, or nosy, whatever, and I sort of just taking mental notes and actual notes after, and then I think just wanting to tell a story that was lived in this culture is what started me on that particular book, was just feeling like there's so many stories. How do I unroll just one of them? Like, how do I unspool just one of the, you know, 50 stories that I've heard over the time?
And I want to also talk a little bit about your forthcoming book,
mm-hmm.
because, I mean, it hasn't come out yet, but
no, it's like October 31st.
Yeah, it must be really exciting.
It is. It is.
And I wanted to kind of talk about the concept for that book, mm-hmm. because, I mean, just from reading some of the synopsis, it seems like it's about this girl. She's black and white. She's mixed,
mm-hmm.
in kind of her upbringing and how she parses through that, and also, like, the relatives it feels that she interacts with. So I was interested why you decided to kind of, like, tell the story, why you wanted to tell the story of
yeah.
this girl.
This story, it's a modern day passing story. Mm-hmm. So she's mixed race, but she's passing for white and privileged.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular story I've lived with for 9 years.
Oh my gosh.
I started writing it right after Earth's Waters came out.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the same idea, but this character, the main character, was 17. She was at an all-girls Catholic private boarding school, mm-hmm. in Vermont, and it was a different world around her. But the idea, the kernel of the story, it being that she was passing, was still there. So then I kept trying to shape it and shape it, and I wrote it out, and then I pitched it out, what I thought was a finished novel, and I got a lot of no's, nice no's, but the comments that kept coming back were, she's so mean. Why is she so mean? I can't tap into her because she's really mean and she's really... So I went back and started to revise it. So it was a lot of that sort of shaping it, reshaping it, trying it again. And then at one point, I sort of just put it in a drawer, but not in the sense where I was thinking, oh, forget it, that's done. But I still felt like I want to do this story.
Mm-hmm.
But I just have to figure out how to do it better. And so then in this, how it turned out now is, she's a 27-year-old woman. She is still, the idea of her passing is still there. But now I had to build an adult world around her. So she's got like a regular, she's got a job and she's got a fiance and all these other things. So these other characters had to come into play.
Yeah.
The reason why I wanted to tell this story is there's an actor, an actress, I will leave her nameless, but she is mixed race. But in the movies and the roles that she's played, you would never know that. She's styled as a white woman. And there was one movie she was in where her parents were portrayed by two white people. So she's not passing because we know her background. In general, the public does. But I was like, how could... So it started me thinking, like, how could you... I mean, is that possible in these modern times to maybe pull that off? Like, how could you pass? Because she's not intentionally doing it, but it's almost like if you didn't know who her parents were...
Then you wouldn't...
You wouldn't know. Yeah. You would just assume. So it would be like almost like a lie by omission. So if she doesn't correct you...
Right.
If you were like, oh, well, you know, we'll call her Sally. Hey, Sally, you know, you're a white woman in this world. If she didn't say, well, no, I'm not. If she just said, right. You know, that's it. Like, she passed, you know? So I started thinking about it that way.
Okay, I'm just going to say someone's name and we 100% don't have to discuss it, but I just have to get it off my chest now because it's like, it's no shade towards her, but she's the person who I think of, Rashida Jones. Am I correct in that?
I won't deny or confirm. Okay.
I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't off base with that. Mm-hmm. But
what makes you think her?
Because I honestly did not know that Rashida Jones was mixed until maybe like my late teens, early 20s. Mm-hmm. And I just always remember seeing her and there was nothing about her in particular that was I guess, quote unquote, the blackness that I had seen.
Right.
And so I think I never even thought about if she was
black identified in any way.
Yeah. But she doesn't deny her blackness. In fact, I was just reading this article about who was she really, really good friends with? Oh my gosh.
Rashida Jones?
Yeah. She was really good friends with someone. Oh no, I'm sorry. Her sister, Khadida Jones,
yes.
was really good friends with Aaliyah.
Yes.
But,
yes, yes, yes.
But then also, I guess...
But her sister presented differently.
Yes. That's why
I was like... Because her sister was also engaged to Tupac.
Yes. And so that's why I'm like, I've seen these photos of Rashida Jones with Tupac. So, and then you see her sister, and that makes you kind of go,
Right.
But Rashida Jones, to me, is someone who, like... She feels like she plays white women.
Right.
I hate to put it that way, but like, if that's such a complicated way to put it, but
yeah.
Anyways.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, so if you take someone like that and you put them in a situation where maybe they have to, maybe choosing to present themselves a certain way gives them a little boost.
Yeah.
Whether it's in career or life or privilege. So what would happen if they said, okay, I'm going to just go with this, you know? And in this particular story, she didn't just come to this idea on her own. The main character's name is Nora McKenzie. She doesn't come to this idea on her own. It's something, things that have happened to her that sort of plopped her down on this path. And she just made the sort of choice at one point to just keep going with it.
I see.
Because it was easier, I think, to keep going with it than do the opposite, which would be to sort of like reveal the full truth.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, let's talk about your podcast.
Of course.
Hey, Sis.
Yes.
And it's so appropriate because it's with your actual sister.
Sister, yep, Nyla.
Mm-hmm. And so I kind of know a little bit about how the podcast came to be, but how do you explain it to people?
Well, you know what? For years now, wanted to do a podcast because I, like I said before, am curious/nosy. I like talking to people. I like asking a lot of questions. That's just my reporter background. And I like to understand people's stories, like how they got to be doing what they're doing or some of the choices they made. And I'm just interested in their point of view and their experience. So I've wanted to do a podcast for a long time, but I didn't want to do it as a solo person. I wanted to have it as a conversation that we invite other people into it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, podcasts started exploding and everybody was doing a podcast and I was like, oh man, maybe I shouldn't. But it kept sticking with me and I was like, I really do want to do this. So I had this idea initially the idea was going to be to talk about, to have another mother on the podcast with me. And it was going to be two moms talking about everything other than childhood and motherhood.
Oh, nice.
And sort of, you know, reconnecting with the other parts of your identity that have nothing to do with your kid. Mm-hmm. And the my friend that I wanted to, she's out in LA, that I wanted to come in on it with me, she started getting busy and then she got a divorce. So there was a lot going on in her life. And I was like, okay, we're going to have to just put it on the back burner for now. But then she said, you know what? I'm not going to be able to do it, which was fair. And but I still wanted to do it. So I spoke to my sister about it. And I said, she and I talk every day. We're a close family and we talk, she and I particularly talk a lot every day. Mm-hmm. And so our conversations range from, you know, the Pepsi commercial to seeing Get Out to, you know, what's going on in the White House right now. Mm-hmm. And but at the time she was pregnant and she was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to juggle doing that and motherhood and my career. So again, it got put on the back burner. But then cut to her baby's here. She's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
And she's got more room to sort of like piece things together. And I said, do you still want to do this? And she said, yeah. So then we started thinking about it and talking it over, kicking over ideas. Like, how should we do this? And then last year we went to this conference called Mom 2.0. It was in Laguna Beach. So she and I were on a panel together. And a lot of people would be like, oh, it's the Blade Sisters. Mm-hmm. So we kind of came as a package. And people were like, oh, the Blade Sisters are here. And it was a fun little thing.
Yeah.
So then we started to play on that. And we're like, hey, why don't we do something called, that's like two sisters talking about, talking to other women. So, you know, two sisters talking about the sisterhood in the larger sense. And we got the URL. I was like, let me check this domain name real quick. Hey, Sis was there. And I was like, let's do that. Because at the time, that's a thing that people say still, like, hey, sis, how you doing today, sis? And that kind of, it shows this sort of camaraderie and a connection. And so we said, let's do it that way. And then we start to, over the holidays last year, we were like, let's really figure out how this will be. Like, what's the run of show? And then we came up with this idea that we would talk to other women only. Sorry, guys. We talked to other women and hear their stories and hear how they got to be what they're doing and how they got to be passionate about something. And talking to women who are also maybe in the midst of transitioning between one thing and the next, mm-hmm. and just hearing how they're doing it and how they're making things make sense. And I think those kinds of stories are interesting because you always learn something new that you didn't know. We had an electrician by our house yesterday to fix something, and he was saying something. Like, he showed me some instrument, and I was like, oh, I didn't even know that existed. And he was like, the difference, I'm trying to remember his words. He's like, the difference between not knowing and knowing is a matter of seconds. And I was like, that's really true.
That's really true.
And I was like, let me write that down. So it's true. I was like, you know, just talking to someone for 10 minutes, you can really learn something that you might be able to apply to your life. So that was the driving force behind this podcast, was to talk to other women, find out how they got to be where they are, or how they are trying to negotiate their path to get where they want to go, and share those stories with other people. So that's how we got Hey Sis podcast.
And how has it been?
It's been good. It's been really fun. We have a really great producer named Alex. He's out in Seattle. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing. It's interesting that
all of you are remote.
We're everywhere. Yeah. So Alex is in Seattle. And – or is he in – yeah, he's in Portland, Oregon or Seattle. One of the two. And my sister is in Salt Lake City, Utah right now.
Okay.
She moved there last year. She was in San Diego before. I'm over here on the East Coast. So it's just really interesting to me how through technology we're able to – do this, mm-hmm. and it works. And I think just last month we had a show. We went to Vegas to celebrate my mother's 70th birthday.
I had heard the one like prior, or the one right after that.
Right. So we were able to actually sit next to each other, like you and I are doing, mm-hmm. and talk to each other, which was great too, because that's a different vibe too when you're actually sitting with the person. But it's been going really well. We're still really enjoying it, and people have received it really well too. So we're just looking for, you know, more people's stories, more guests, and trying to really, like, we have a list. We have, like, our blue sky list, people mm-hmm. that we would love if the sky opened up and it was just, like, perfect, everything was set up, we'd be like, yes, we did it. So we have this blue sky list that I call a blue sky list. We have a list of people that are approachable, but we don't have any connection to them. Uh-huh. So we'd be kind of cold calling them. Mm-hmm. Then we have a list of people that we know and within our networks that we can sort of tap into. So one of the people on our blue sky, like A-list, plus plus list, is Ava DuVernay.
Yes.
I would love
I feel to like talk to her. I totally 100% feel like Ava DuVernay is the kind of woman who, if she meets you and she likes you, she's like, cool, dope, let's do it.
I agree with you. I think she's really like cool like that. She's cool people.
Totally.
And the funny thing is, like, our paths have crossed early in her career. So I used to work for ESPN.com, and thankfully I didn't have to go to Bristol, Connecticut that much. I was going, you know, back and forth for meetings, but mainly my office was in the magazine offices mm-hmm. here in New York. And at the time, Ava DuVernay had a PR agency.
Yes.
And so a couple times I had to deal with the PR agency, and I always remembered her name because it's very specific, yes. right? And I said, you know, when she started to come out in this director's role, I was like, oh my goodness, that's the same Ava DuVernay. Mm-hmm. So I always say, like, the day that I get to meet her, I'm going to bring out that story in some way without yes. sounding like a complete fangirl. But she's one of those people that I would just love to hear her story, like how she went from, and like hear the story beyond the story that you normally hear right. in magazines, that I want to hear how she is doing what she wants to do. You know, how she right. got to that point in her life.
Yeah. Right. The thing about Ava DuVernay also that people should be very, like, cognizant of is, like, she does the things she wants to do and also, like, doesn't do the things she doesn't want to do.
Exactly.
And I really admire that about mm-hmm. her. I think that especially when you're young and you're coming out of college, you're given a bunch of things that people are like, well, you need to do this in order to, and I think that there are certainly some things that you should be doing,
right, right.
but I think that sometimes it's really easy to get stuck in doing things that you quite frankly don't want to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's good to kind of gauge what's necessary and what's not. And I feel like she's done that in a remarkable way. And I think people will go, well, she has the clout or the money or the agency. And I don't always feel like it was that way for her.
No. I mean, she's at a certain altitude now in her yeah. career where she can call shots and say, I'm right. not doing that.
Right.
But I think to get there, she had to make a choice at some point early on to say, I want to get to point A and I don't want to do this, this, or this. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sell myself short. I'm not going to sell myself out. Like, whatever it was that she said I'm not going to do, I think there's a moment where you have to make a choice to say, okay, I'm going to call my shots and what makes sense for me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that people can do in their, you don't have to be, you know, trying to direct a $1 million movie.
Right.
But it can be in your just regular life where you're thinking, I've been stuck here. I feel really stuck. I'm feeling trapped. And when you could take a look at sort of the things that you're doing that you don't like doing, you have to ask yourself, like, why am I still doing these things?
Right.
I mean, in a general sense, everyone has to work, you have to pay taxes, all those things. You know, there's certain things that you have to do, mm-hmm. but there are so many other things that you're doing in your life that you do not need to do at all.
Yes.
You just have to have the courage and the bravery to say, I'm not doing this anymore. This is not helping me. I'm moving on.
Yes.
You know, same way, like, as, you know, people often say, like, you know, no is a full sentence. You know, it's a complete choice.
Right.
And so, again, a lot of times women have to come to the point in their lives where they're like, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. So I'm going to say no to that and feel okay with it and feel like that's fully their choice and their mm-hmm. right to say no and not feel like they have to be, you know, kowtowing and trying to appeal to everybody by yeah. just saying yes to everything. So I yeah. think at some point in her career, maybe it was early on where she had to say, okay, I really want to direct. I don't want to do these other things. So I'm not going to do these other things. And I'm going right. to focus my energy on getting to, you know, the director's chair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just aspire and really try to focus on that within my own interests.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you're like, I want to do this podcast.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what I'm doing. Otherwise, I'm going to fit this into that framework because yes. it's important.
It is important. It's mm-hmm. really important for me. Here is one of my last questions. I love asking this question because it's so like daring and very abstract and like aspirational. But what is your dream right now? Like, what do you think about? What like maybe keeps you up at night, or you think about it a few times a week? Like,
it makes me excited. You
and
mean
it makes you excited? Yeah.
Honestly, and it's really interesting that we just came off of the Ava DuVernay conversation, but I have this, what makes me excited is the idea that someone like an Ava DuVernay would get a hold of one of my books and be like, this is what I want to do next. Mm. And the idea that they would option my book and tell that story in the way that she can is one of those dreams that I'm like, oh my gosh, that would be miraculous. I think I'd run into the streets.
I know. Waiting. Oh my God. Well, I'm glad you spoke that into existence, honestly. I'm really glad you did.
Thank you.
Alrighty. So I have one segment on my podcast called the Plus One segment. Mm-hmm. Shout out a person, place, thing, or experience. And I was wondering if maybe you have one.
I was thinking about this. Okay. So I was like, what am I into these days? Mm-hmm. I read a lot of books, so I didn't want to like always put it on a book. However, there is a person who I was late to come to this person. But once I did, I'm like fully in, invested 100%. And that is Chancellor Jonathan Bennett, better known as Chance the Rapper.
Oh, yes. Okay.
He is so, like, I mean, I was late on the coloring book. I was late to it. I heard the name a lot, but I was like, whatever.
You know what? I think that there's a time, like, I think that music always enters your life at the perfect moments.
That's smart. Yeah.
I really do feel that way. Like, I love music.
Right.
Like, music is the thing that is, like, pumping through my veins. It keeps me happy. Like, when everything feels like it's going to shit, I'm like, I'm about to turn on this music. And, like, this is, like, my saving grace right now. And I've been listening to a lot of, like, Janet Jackson. Ah. And it's, like, there's so much Janet Jackson music that I have not heard.
Right.
That you feel like you should already know.
Yeah.
And I'm never like, I'm ashamed about it. I'm like, I needed this song in my life right now.
Yeah.
So anyways,
I think you're right about that, because like I said, I heard the name, people were raving about him, and I was just like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And I heard about him not being signed by any labels, and all that stuff was respectable. But then I was on a run. I'm a runner, and I was running somewhere, and I said, let me just listen to this finally. And it was great. Like, it was one of those things where you're almost stopping what you're doing. You're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Rewind, you know? And it was, and since then, everything that has come out about him has been just so inspired and interesting and really, like, impressive. Because, you know, whether it's his dedication to Chicago and the youth and the education system over there, or his idea to sort of let the music be free, you know? He's just a really upstanding young man. And he's so young, too, where you're like, how did he get all this sense, you know?
Hey, I know. Thank
but
goodness,
he's
honestly.
So wise and sharp and talented. And I'm really impressed with everything that comes out of his camp, really big time. So I'm a big plus one on Chance the Rapper.
Shout out to Chance. Seriously. Okay, but maybe a book. I think that would be great.
Okay.
You should say a book, whether maybe you just finished it or you're reading right now. I would love to know that.
You know what I'm reading right now? I just started it yesterday. It's this book by Kathleen Collins, is that right? I hope it's right. And it's Whatever Happened to Interracial Love. And it is her, it's a story. So it's like a collection of stories. And I just started reading it, but it's really sharp and really good. It's one of those things where she just has a really good sense of the written word, so that she can, you know, a turn of phrase, you kind of like read it again and you're like, that was really good. And it doesn't have to be, you know, paragraphs, you know. She really is able to, or she's passed away, but she was really able to convey an emotion and a moment with just, you know, a couple sentences. So I just started it and I'm really enjoying it so far. But before that, I was reading, here's something about Big Little Lies. So,
oh my gosh!
So, last summer I read Big Little Lies, the book, and it was so good because it was the first time in a long time that I didn't see a twist coming. And I was really like, oh, like I sat up in the bed like, yes. What? Yes. Oh no! And so that hasn't happened in a long time with a book. And now watching the HBO series that just ended recently, it's really good because they stayed close to the book. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spoil anything for you. I know you're not all the way done yet.
Almost there.
But they stayed close to the book, and the casting was really smart because the book is set in Australia and the show is set in Monterey, California. So it was a chance that they were taking. It could have gone a different way, but it's really a good rendering of that book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, so my plus one is Big Little Lies.
Okay.
Because, and this is what I wanted to talk to you. So I heard you talking about it on your podcast.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this show, well, first of all, I'm only halfway through.
Yes.
But even the first episode, it gave me so much, like, emotional anxiety.
Right.
For me, I could feel each of the characters has like their very own set of what feels like very specific like problems, but it almost, I'm just waiting for all of the dominoes to slide down.
Right, right.
And I think also a reason why I didn't expect to connect with the show, but I now do, is because of the kids in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, number one, the kids are, first of all, amazing actors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I kind of see a little bit of myself in those kids.
Interesting.
I think a part of it is that, like, my parents are divorced. You know, I grew up with my parents until I was 13 years old. My parents got divorced. I went to school for most of my education with mostly white kids.
Mm.
And so just like that environment of not particularly like the love triangle,
right,
like aspect of it, but this idea of like parents interacting with parents and kids and children gave me just, I think that kind of hit a point for me.
Wow.
That
okay.
Kind of just made me like, whoa, this is not what I was expecting at all. I kind of went into it like, is this about to be like SJP's divorce? Did you see that? Did you watch any of that? Yeah,
I saw a couple of those.
And I saw like
two episodes of that.
Yeah, and it's not the same thing at all, but I was just kind of, you know, like being silly about it.
Right.
But I really enjoy it so far.
Well, what's interesting is, and you talked about music, the little girls, Madeline's daughter, that character is so into music in this very grown-up way, a very mature way.
That's so true.
Yeah. So I was like, huh, this is a good, like, they picked a good little actress in her to portray that, because she, you feel like she's wise beyond her years.
Totally.
Just from the music that she's playing for her parents.
Right.
You know? Yeah. One of the things that I liked about it, the show as a whole, was that they told adult stories, adult women's stories, in a real way and a relatable way, that even if you didn't like a character, you were still interested and you wanted to know what was going to happen with them. So that's the point, you know. Stories, I often say, like, stories is what, it's the connective tissue with all of us. It's what keeps us, it's what makes us us and what makes us human.
Yes.
So when I see a story being told in this way that makes you sit up and take notice, it makes you it hits something at home with you from your childhood, it resonates with you in some way, I really enjoy that. I thought they did a really good job of telling grown-up women's stories, because, you know, these days it's like, okay, it's a teenage wolf or a vampire, or it's a Marvel's, you know, superhero, or it's a teenager who's living a life that seems very adult. But it's not often that it's like adult women's stories and their lives and the ins and outs and the sort of complicated lives that they're living. So I really appreciated that that kind of story was told, you know, and they did it well.
Yeah. So I'm really excited, but also very hesitant to finish these episodes just because I'm like, what am I going to encounter?
You've got to. I'm surprised it hasn't been spoiled for you or anything like that yet, because a lot of people have been watching it and talking about it on Twitter.
I've been staying away from all of the long reads on Big Little Lies until I'm done.
Smart. Yeah.
Nicole, thank you.
Thank you.
This has been a great conversation.
It's been so fun.
And where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me on the internet at NicoleBlades.com. They can find me on Twitter at NicoleBlades and Instagram, Nicole_Blades. Facebook, writer Nicole Blades. And our podcast is HeySisPodcast.com.
Nice.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.